Welcome back. A recent poll declared that half of Americans enjoy consuming content from the true crime genre, and even 13% go as far to say it's their favorite. Gosh, I think it's more than that. True crime media invites people into the lives of serial killers, kidnappers, assaulters, law enforcement, and sometimes the victims. And with us to discuss this phenomenon, why do we like true crime so much, and why are we obsessed with serial killers? Here are two of the experts who have studied this topic. Dr. Carrie Brigato is a clinical psychologist, a researcher, and author in the areas of early psychotic illness, as well as severe violence, serial mass and spree murders, and sexual assault. He's presently a visiting scholar at Boston College, where he examines crimes such as murder. He's currently serving as a consultant on a project analyzing murders and strangulation in particular. And he's a member of a super sleuths group in which experts from diverse forensic disciplines convene. He's got two decades of clinical experience and a full-time practice in New York City. Welcome, Dr. Brigato. Welcome back to the show. Good to see you, and good to have you as always. And we have Dr. Stacy Nye. She is a clinical psychologist up in Milwaukee. She has more than 30 years of clinical practice. She's also an expert in arts and entertainment psychology, analyzing the intersection of psychology and entertainment. She's been interviewed numerous times in the psychology of our fascination with horror. She's the host of a Psych and Sound Media podcast where she explores the psychology of movies and television shows. Dr. Nye, thank you, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Let's talk to you first, Dr. Nye. You have lectured quite a bit about the fascination with true crime, and it has a historical background. This is not something new. How far back do we have to go to see the obsession that the public has with crime?
Well, they date back to, like, the 1400s, where murder pamphlets were printed up in whatever area someone lived in to read about true accounts of murder or some kind of fascinating crime. There'd be a narrative and trial transcripts and photos and illustrations and sometimes even written confessions from the murderer before their execution.
So, if you, I know you have several bullet points. I'm going to ask Dr. Brigato the same question, but what do you, like, give me a couple bullet points of why you think people really obsess with this true crime.
Well, I think it's fascinating, right? And I think that it's part of, like, I mean, one idea is that it's like a puzzle that we're all trying to solve. So we can't get enough of playing that kind of armchair detective, piecing together the clues, just like the detective does in whatever, you know, either real or scripted kind of show or podcast or book that we're consuming at that time. So we're really drawn to that, trying to figure it out, and maybe even figuring it out before, you know, anybody else does.
You know, and this follows through with all the, you know, the fiction books that you always, you know, are looking for that twist, and you're always trying to figure out what who's going to be the murderer. It's not going to be the person you suspect. Dr. Brigato, you know, what is this? Is there some idea? Because you are the author of a book, The New Evil, Understanding the Emergence and Modern Violent Crime, and you talk about the rankings of certain evil people. Why are people fascinated with the evil people in our society?
Well, my experience has been that there are several explanations depending upon the person. For example, anyone in the true crime industry will tell you that the vast majority of the people who listen to them, consume their books, read their articles, watch them on shows, are female. And this doesn't shock me because females are disproportionately affected by violent crime. So that I think that for some people, it's about learning the way that criminals think, how to avoid being targeted by crime, understanding offenses that you may have experienced yourself with a stranger or a partner or someone else. Then there are some people that I think, consistent with what's already been said, view it with a kind of intellectual detachment and find it interesting of it, you know, as if it's one big, you know, episode of Columbo or Sherlock Holmes story that they feel they're you know, and it's very gratifying to see the puzzle come together. And I think that psychologically gives us a sense that darkness is controlled and can be kind of figured out and understood tidily and we're safe. And then I think there are some people that use the true crime genre as a way of controlling their own dark side. It's like a way of sort of playing with your own darkness without ever embracing it. And I think it fascinates people to think that a human being, not a monster, but a human being, can do anything, you know, from, you know, imitate Buddha to imitate Ted Bundy. And when people realize that they have that capacity, I think it's terrifying to them and fascinating.
And, you know, I don't want to always bring my book into it, but as you both know, I wrote this book, Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy. And one of the questions I always get is, are you afraid? Were you afraid when you saw him? And the real, you know, abiding, like, fear is that I'm looking at someone who has done really horrible things, but he doesn't have the tattoo on his forehead, which just chills you because you think to yourself, well, who else do I know who could be capable of this that I have no awareness of? And that's what's frightening. It's not him, because he's in a controlled environment and he's not going to do anything to me because he's, you know, going to manipulate me and try to get me to help him. But the idea that we have other people that we know who might be capable of it, that's chilling.
Yeah, for sure.
And just one other point that you both brought up, that Dr. Brocato brought up about being frightened. Why would someone want to be frightened? So if a woman's watching this and she's saying to herself, wow, you know I'm a target when I go out jogging. I see this woman in the show. She went out jogging and she got abducted and killed. Like, why does that make you feel better as opposed to worse? What do you think, Dr. Nye?
You know, I think that I've talked to a lot of women who consume true crime, and many of them say that they listen to it as kind of like a dress rehearsal. They're trying to learn what to look out for, and I think even being a little empowered by, you know, they don't have to just go along. They can say no to people. You know, women aren't socialized to say no to people, but if they are consuming true crime and they're learning tips and looking for, you know, seeing what to look out for, then they can say, okay, this guy's giving me the creep. I don't have to go out on a date with him. I can cross to the other side of the room. I can ask for help. I can call the police because I have every right to, protect myself, basically.
And Dr. Brocato, let's start this topic, and it's probably going to spill over into the next segment. But I do want to talk a little bit about some of the terms that we see in your books and in your podcast, Dr. Nye. I'm going to talk about antisocial personality, a sociopath, psychopath, mm-hmm. and a sadist. Can you just briefly tell us what all those things are, starting with antisocial?
You mean me?
Yes,
or,
please.
Or did you? Okay. Well, first of all, antisocial personality is, out of all the things you mentioned, the only one that's included in the official diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders that's put out by the American Psychiatric Association. And that essentially is a personality disorder. It means that an individual demonstrates a long-standing pattern of not really having much of a moral compass, being willing to exploit other people, commit criminal acts, be charming, manipulative, etc. A lot of the traits that we associate with quote-unquote evil are conceptualized there as being part of a mental disorder. What's interesting is that that really represents a watered-down version of the construct of being a psychopath, as was originally defined by Keckley and then Hare, which has more traits to it that I think really distinguish the worst of the worst. But in an attempt to be medical and kind of objective, the American Psychiatric Association sort of took out the qualities of a psychopath that have to be felt as opposed to objectively viewed, and you wind up with this watered-down version of a psychopath, which is antisocial personality. Sociopathy is just an earlier term, and there's a whole reason why the word was changed, but it is used essentially as a way of referring to a kind of less severe psychopath, closer to the construct of narcissism. But it is that people use those words interchangeably, and I think it basically just reflects a holdover from the term that was used before we said psychopath.
Let's
about being cruel to people for pleasure.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Just finish your thought, and then I'm going to have to take a break. Go ahead, Dr. Brocato. Sadism.
No, I was just going to say that sadism simply means that one goes beyond narcissism and psychopathy into enjoying being cruel to people for the sake of it.
And that's chilling. And on that note, let's take a break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more. I want to talk a little bit about what is the difference between a mental illness and a personality disorder, and does it matter when it comes to studying the criminal minds? We'll be back in a minute on WGN. We are here with Dr. Stacy Nye, clinical psychologist. She's the host of Psych and Sound Media Podcast, where she explores the psychology of movies and television shows. And Dr. Brocato, who co-wrote The New Evil, Understanding the Emergence of Modern Violent Crime. Let's finish this topic, Dr. Brocato, about mental illness versus personality disorder. We talked about antisocial personality, sadism, those types of things. Like, how do you, just simply, if you can, describe what a mental illness is as opposed to a personality disorder? And does it matter when it comes to analyzing the acts of a killer?
Well, this is a very complicated topic. I've been trying to give the brief version of it, but the issue is that we do consider personality disorders because they involve a pervasive pattern of maintaining healthy, appropriate relationships with other people as a mental disorder. But when we talk about mental disorders, what we're generally referring to in most people's mind is something that affects their will, their insight, their choice a little bit, because the person has lost touch with reality to some degree, or is suffering from something that's affecting their mood or their ability to contain anxiety. And the terms bleed together because we've collapsed those kind of moral interpersonal difficulties under that umbrella. But I think when you talk about a very violent, severe crime, and you're thinking about somebody being quote-unquote crazy, as the public says, which is a term I don't care for, it gets very confusing, because if you diagnose someone with a personality disorder, you could give the false impression that they didn't really have choice. There was no moral element to it. And I think we have to be very, very careful when it comes to that.
And, you know, and that's a good way to say it. And Dr. Nye, you know, when you do this stuff with the television shows and the movies that you're analyzing, It's very educative, because you're taking the characters and you're trying to decide, you know, given the character, you know, what personality traits is that person exhibiting to make them into one of these things? Is that kind of what the gist of your show is?
The gist of my show, yes, it's certainly looking at the character and their motivations and trying to figure out, you know, what will happen next. It's a bit of unraveling and solving the puzzle. It's a bit of going behind the scenes, but, you know, again, people are just fascinated by these people who commit these unspeakable crimes. And as you said before, they can be hiding in plain sight, and we don't even realize it.
And, you know, Dr. Brocato, you and I were on a podcast a couple weeks ago, and this is kind of a hard thing to say, because, you know, people bristle when you say, hey, John Gacy had a very human side of him, or, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, had a part of him that was not bad. When you say that, people start rolling their eyes. But you think that we need to examine that part, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think part of the part of the fascination for people with true crime is they want to believe that there are some people who are essentially the real life equivalents of the villains and monsters from myths and fantasies and books and movies. But the truth is that in all my career, in all the cases I've examined, every offender I've ever met, and every case I've ever read about, you just can't find people who day in and day out commit acts that would be characterized as evil. Most of them do evil things, horrible things, once in a while, and then it's interdispersed with either a split life, a double life, where you have a spouse and children or friends or people who like you, or you could be funny or warm or reliable to some people while being horrible to others. Or at the very least, there are periods of functioning that go between where you're not walking around killing people or assaulting people. And, there's very, 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 very few exceptions. I think it's important to understand that part of the reason we don't want to see this is that there's the implication that a human being is that just like ourselves is capable of doing very terrible things.
And, you know, when I've heard about Gacy victims who got away, and I've heard about other victims of other serial killers, some of them talk about a change that comes over the serial killer. Like, you can see the eyes become vacant, or you can see just a different, like almost just a change in personality, and in hard to describe. Have you heard about those things, Dr. Bricado? And what do you make of that?
Well, what you're talking about is a phenomenon that occurs in the type of serial killer that engages in a kind of a compartmentalization, where the individual part of the time is committing these horrendous offenses, harboring horrendous fantasies, and playing them out repetitively, and at the same time is living some kind of double life. And what happens is that under pressure, some of them start to show the darker side of the self to people. And it's usually when they lose control or become very overwhelmed with anger, or you know, feel that they're losing their grip on things. And just for a split second, you can start to see what the victims see. And I can give a very quick example of that BTK, Dennis Rader, the serial killer. There's a famous story that his daughter, Carrie Rawson, has told in public several times, that they were sitting at the dinner table one day, and someone spilled some pasta and some sauce went on the floor, and he became demonic looking. His eyes changed. He became enraged, and he started choking her brother. And for just a split second, they saw BTK. I remember I said to Carrie, maybe the sauce reminded him of blood. But he became extremely enraged, and you know, and it was because he lost control in the moment, and that's when you start to see that spilling over.
Interesting. And Dr. Nye, kind of a little off the topic, but you know, you talked a little bit in one of the lectures you were given. There's some criticism about, say, the Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer show that came out on Netflix. It was one of the best watched shows ever on Netflix. I mean, it was amazing how many people watched it. It was well done. I think it got some nominations for some awards. But, you know, are we glorifying these people? I mean, we can't remember one single name of the victims of Dahmer, but Dahmer's kind of a household word. What do you have to say about that?
Absolutely correct. We do glorify these serial killers, and you know, often, like, there was a show about Ted Bundy, and now I don't have that name in front of me, but it was played by very handsome actor, and it's totally glorified, sexualized, you know, kind of, you know, yes, we know, same Ted Bundy, we don't know the name of any of his victims, and so women become, and the victims become, like, just a plot point in these shows about these disgusting men, you know, and the victims and their families get re-traumatized, and, you know, they feel really excluded, and, you know, they don't want their family story being used for Netflix or Ryan Murphy's profit. So they have every right to feel that way, and so if you're doing a show like that and you're not consulting the victims, if you're not, you know, highlighting the victims, then, you know, you're maybe being exploitative.
So before we take a break, and we're going to go into the next hour, if you guys can hang with me, but Dr. Bricado, can you tell people, like, about your book, New Evil? Just briefly tell what it's about and where they can get it.
Well, the quick version is that the book is basically divided into two halves. The first part provides a breakdown of 22 subtypes of offender, ranging from people who are engaging in self-defense all the way up to repeat torture murderers of the worst kind. And they're organized in such a way that one might consider them a kind of scale, going from the least offensive to the most horrendous, trying to study the construct of why some cases are so bad we use the word evil to understand them. Even professionals privately sometimes use that word when the offender is bad enough. And the second part of the book explores how technological changes and cultural changes have made new crimes possible that couldn't have existed earlier, because the technology didn't exist, and the cultural changes have given people the kind of audacity to do things commonly now that actually never happened in decades past.
The book is The New Evil, Understanding the Emergence of Modern Violent Crime, available at all bookstores. And I'm going to take a break now because I have to. And then when I come back, I'm going to talk to you, Dr. Nye, about where people can find you. We'll be back in a minute. We're talking to Dr. Gary Brocato, and we're talking to Dr. Stacy Nye. Dr. Stacy Nye, tell our listeners about your podcast and where they can pick it up.
So I have a few podcasts. I have one that I can't say on the air, but it's about the funny, crazy things that happen to a person. So it's the fill in the blank that happens to me podcast. And then I have psychoanalyzing the patient and psychoanalyzing the fall of the House of Usher, which are companion podcasts to scripted thriller shows on TV.
Fabulous.
I have a new podcast coming out this fall, which will be a true crime podcast based on a case from my high school days. Two of my classmates were murdered on the first day of school in 1979.
And that was in the northern suburbs, right?
Yes, Morton Grove.
Yeah, it was never solved.
45 years still hasn't been solved.
So interesting.
I'm hoping to bring some attention to that case and maybe get that wrapped up.
Well, great. I look forward to it. Maybe we'll do some interviewing on that one. I've got a nice Denise who sent me a text and said, can I please ask your guests if narcissism is a learned behavior? And then I have another text from the 847. How do these disorders evolve? Are these learned disorders? Does the person realize they have their disorder? Dr. Nye, why don't you start? And then I'll have Gary weigh in as well. I think this is a question that everybody has.
Sure. I mean, personality disorders develop through, you know, a whole host of things, much like many of our, you know, both, behavioral and physical disorders. So sometimes genetics play a part. We might inherit those traits from family members. Sometimes childhood trauma can lead people to develop those kinds of set personality traits or abuse from a parent figure or, you know, some family member or other, you know, important figure in your life. But no one thing leads a person to develop a personality disorder, and often it's several of those things. So many people can be, unfortunately, abused in their childhood and not develop a personality disorder and so on.
So, Dr. Brocato, is it ever a goal for people like you who study these kinds of things to find a way where there's a point, you know, where is the point of no return? You know, was a John Wayne Gacy at the age of 8 already too far gone to stop him from doing what he did? Is there some idea that at some point in the future we can identify the people that are going to perhaps pursue these kinds of crimes and to stop them somehow through some sort of therapy or medicine?
Well, again, the quick version of this is I agree with a lot of what was just said about the multi-determined, you know, pathway to developing one of these conditions. And I think when you talk about Gacy, you start talking about the most severe kind of personality disorder where somebody has intense antisocial traits and is also sadistic and murderous, able to commit sexual acts repetitively, to play out fantasies, etc. What we know about these offenders is that the fantasies of domination, control, etc., that they start to play out to level the playing field against people who have treated them a certain way, which is certainly what you saw with Gacy, really start very young. For example, there's a story that I read in one biography of Gacy that he had cut a mouse in half as a small child, even as a kid, was doing things like that and engaging in some sexually perverse stuff, even as a kid, as a teenager. And you start to get the sense that early on, those fantasies start to bubble and brew. And I think the quote-unquote point of no return is when the fantasies have been enacted in a criminal way, and the person gets excitement from it and realizes that they could just keep doing it over and over again and perfect that fantasy. There's no indication in the literature that such people stop. A sexually sadistic serial killer once spilling over into, let's say, murder with sexual qualities, just going to keep doing that until they're captured or die. And but I think there probably is a place somewhere in childhood where if there were somebody who was kind to a person who's got potentially a certain kind of brain, where they're sensation seeking and fearless and charming and all those things, I think a person like that, if treated well, might do something pro-social, like be the person to throw themselves on a grenade and save the platoon, or potentially, you know, work for law enforcement or put out fires or do something that takes a fearless kind of brain. But unfortunately, when you're treated horribly, you know, you can take those same pro-social qualities and make them anti-social. So that I think it's that wherever that point is that someone needs that kind of kindness, that seems to be the place where they go haywire.
Very, very interesting. I want to thank both of my guests. Dr. Gary Brocato, can you just tell our listeners quickly where they can find your book?
Oh, sure. It's available everywhere books are sold, but Amazon is always the easiest place. It's sold out in a lot of places. I'm proud to say it was a number one bestseller on Amazon in forensic psychology for quite a while. And sometimes there's back order, but you will get it if you order it.
The New Evil, Understanding the Emergence of Modern Violent Crime. I highly recommend it. Excellent, excellent book if you're interested in this topic. And Dr. Stacy Nye, tell people where they can listen to your podcasts.
People can find me on my website, psychandsoundmedia.com. And my podcasts are available wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else.